very much, and
very pleased to be here and have a chance to talk a bit about some of the work we're doing. Just by way of explanation, the Nuffield Trust is a fairly small, independently funded health foundation, we've done quite a lot of different kinds of evaluation for lots of different kinds of organisation, including third sector, voluntary sector organisations and the Department of Health. We've collaborated with academic institutions, but we also do some work that's funded by ourselves. I'm drawing very heavily on the work of my colleagues who work there, Martin Bardsley in particular, and his team, who do a lot of work on the quantitative side, who analyse the hospital data sets, but also colleagues who've left there and gone to the Health Foundation, which is another slightly more generously funded independent institution, which I think will also start doing some quite interesting evaluation work in the future. So my question was, does it work? And I'm coming at this very much from a health perspective. I'm quite a limited, in contrast to what Ezra is talking about, the sort of very thorough kind of multi-layered research evaluation project is a sort of dream. We practically end up having to do much more limited bits of research that are asking much more limited questions, and in a way it's the limitations that come out of the insights from that I wanted to perhaps get a discussion going on. Just to give you a flavour of the sort of things that we've done, on the quantitative side, we've collaborated on a big RCT of telehealth and telecare that was funded by the Department of Health. And my quantitative colleagues have also done the sort of next best to RCT, which are these matched control evaluations of various different projects, including one that was commissioned by Marie Curie Nursing, which, for those of you who are not familiar with, is a voluntary sector organisation that has traditionally done palliative care in the home but also runs hospices. We've also done some more qualitative-based studies, looked at the integration project in Trafford, which is been running for about 4 years and is still sort of struggling to get off the ground. In northwest London is another one which is more local. And we've also started to do much more mixed methods work, I'll talk a little bit about one that's been commissioned by the Cabinet Office, specifically a social action project. And Northwest London, again, has got a much more bigger, much more ambitious integration project underway that is also part of a bigger evaluation programme that's been commissioned by the government. So lots of activity, some quite small, some much larger. And I think for those of you who know the background, forgive me, but I just thought it might be helpful just to sort of set the context a little bit in terms of what the sort of key questions and the sort of pressing nature of the questions being asked of us by those who are commissioning the evaluation. Of course, you know, there are these two separate worlds of NHS, of health and social care that date back to the foundation of the NHS. And I think the other thing that's really striking is the data isn't linked. In a few areas like Torbay, they have linked up data successfully, and this is starting to happen a lot more, but these are separate data sets. And more importantly, I think that there's also a big cultural difference between the two worlds. And so the NHS has very good data sets on utilisation, fairly good data sets on outcome and patient experience, the weighting of patient experience probably not as high in the evaluators' or commissioners' minds as perhaps it should be. And I'm really struck, having come from a health background into social care, just how powerful a sense that social care has of well-being being an important outcome rather than did you use a service or didn't you. And I think this can lead to some interesting tensions in evaluations about what's actually important. The other massive change, of course, difference is that the NHS is free at the point of use, and that our state-funded social care system is very, very heavily rationed. And this, of course, has got worse over the last few years. And we've done work quantifying, as others have, particularly in the LSE, just how much money has been taken out of local government who fund social care. And this means there are a lot of people using social care services who are funding it by themselves, and we have very, very little information about the quality of that. But the NHS is also under massive financial pressure, as it is everywhere, but particularly acute in the UK as it's tried to get its deficit under control. And the gap has been quantified at different levels, but the gap between what we think demand, what you need to fulfil demand, acute quality, and what's available is billions and billions of pounds over the next few years. And this health gap, in a way, has had much more of a sort of powerful impact on the questions that, and the context that if we, our evaluation is being carried out in. And this, I mean, this is probably a very similar sort of trajectory for other countries too, but it's the emergency admissions to hospitals that is just relentlessly going up, particularly for all age groups, but more noticeable, I guess, in the older age groups, but for those diagnoses that are potentially amenable to care services outside, so the ambulatory care services, those have also gone up. We've done a little bit of work trying to disaggregate what's actually happening with the ambulatory care sensitive conditions, and we can see that for things where we have had big big drives in primary care, particularly to improve the quality of sort of preventative care, we can see that, so on the right hand side, that for asthma and for congestive heart failure angina, that the ambulatory care sensitive emergency admissions have started to fall, or at least they're a bit more under control. But it's these on the left, the urinary tract infections, pneumonia, gastroenteritis, that have gone up. And the thought here really is that some of these are not just failures in primary care or preventative health care, that these are potentially things that more access to social care or better quality care of people in their homes or in care homes might have a preventative role to play. And I think this is the idea that's sort of lurking behind a lot of investment from the NHS into social care. If you put some money into social care, you might be able to flatten the curve of hospital admissions. When we're talking about health and social care integration in England, I think there's a lot of very good descriptive work that's been done. I'm just summarising it very crudely here, that I think we've had very, very good examples of local innovation. So Torbay is one, but there are many others. But I think, strikingly, they exist in these pockets of quality and innovation that haven't particularly spread, despite legislative permission to pool budgets and bring these two organisations, or separate organisations, together. I think since in the last couple of years, we've seen a more determined effort by government, certainly at a rhetorical level, but I think also to some extent in investment, to try and bring health and social care together across England. So we've got examples of something called the Pioneer Programme, and these are 14 different projects across England, which are focused on people with long-term conditions, predominantly older people. They're designed really to try and come up with some radical solutions to try and divert people away from hospital and keep people better in the, well for longer and in their homes. There's a big evaluation program attached to that, which is encouraging. It's been extended from 18 months now. I think that it's going to be extended to 5 years, which will be good. More recently, there is something called the Better Care Fund, which is a big fund. It's not new money. It's diverted money. It will be available from 2015-16, but available across England for projects that bring health and social care together. And then there are other smaller amounts of government money going into other projects. So the Cabinet Office have just announced £2 million. They've allocated £2 million to some social action projects. I'll tell you a bit more about this later. But I think it's probably fair to say that certainly from the health side, the assumption is that if you can invest in social care, more of it or better coordinated or something, that you'll be able to relieve the pressure on emergency hospital departments, and that will probably have a good impact on the inpatient side of hospitals as well, because there's also more sign of strain. There's waiting numbers people are waiting are starting to go up, so more hospitals sliding into deficit. There's a real sense of the NHS being in crisis, and hospitals are the really visible part of this. So you've heard a little bit about Torbay, you're familiar with it, but I just thought I'd show you one of the others, the Greenwich Coordinated Care. One of my colleagues at the Nuffield Trust is involved with this. And these are sort of fairly typical. These are often small projects. This one began in 2011. They're being scaled up. They're involving multiple organisations, in this case seven. They're built around GP clusters, usually primary care, bringing everyone in, having some sort of care coordinator, some kind of care navigator to help. I think the interesting thing about this one and others is that they are actually pulling in the voluntary sector much more than I think projects have done in the past, and there's a big question about to what extent this will work, how sustainable it will be. But Greenwich has built a sort of interactive platform that GPs can access and actually find out at that particular moment whether a volunteer is available to come and help someone rather than just pass them on with a phone number to call someone else. So quite a lot of work being done here of obviously great interest, because my colleague Dr. Rebecca Rosen, who's, as I said, works on this, has said that the Jeremy Hunt, the Secretary of State, and Oliver Letwin and various other senior people are descending on them later on this week, and I think they're particularly interested in the social action side of this and is it going to work. But they've also got early findings from their first phase, which is, you know, promising findings about hospital admissions being prevented, reductions in admissions to care homes. So the challenge for evaluators is to know whether, you know, is this data that they've gleaned themselves and looked at their own trends, what does this actually mean? Is this real progress? So I'll talk you through sort of three examples of the sort of work we've done and some of the questions it's raised. They're starting with one that did show a positive impact, although this is more of a healthcare intervention. This was an end-of-life nursing service. So in that sense, it's a sort of contained and discrete intervention. So this is a nursing service that comes into home, does specific things to people at a specific point, and there is some consistency about who might get referred into it and who doesn't. This was commissioned by the Marie Curie themselves. This wasn't a government-funded evaluation. They wanted to know, are people more likely to die at home, and does it reduce emergency admissions at the end of life? My colleagues used a matched control approach to this. So what they did was we know the number of individuals who were in who received the service, and what they did, because we had access to hospital records of both that go back some time, is could we find 30,000, a similar number of individuals whose hospital utilisation tracked very similarly those of the intervention group, and use this as a control group in a way. And this graphically explains, and this was what was exciting for us to actually see this. So you can see the Marie Curie intervention groups in red, the match controls in blue, and you'll see that their intervention, their use of hospital services is fairly well matched, until this is the number on the right-hand side, the Marie Curie service kicks in, and you'll see the blue line, the match control line, the admissions before death rocket, and the Marie Curie group stay or if anything, drop slightly. And similarly, if the service started 2 weeks beforehand, again, a similar effect. The challenge has been that this clarity of impact has not been visible in many, many of the other projects that we've evaluated. So we did some work looking at the Partnership for Older People project. So this was, again, it's a very interesting project. It ran between 2006 and 2009. There was a big government-funded, Department of Health-funded evaluation of it. Lots of different kinds of intervention, all of them aimed to try and keep people in their homes, to divert people from hospital and so forth. The overall evaluation concluded that there were some savings to be had. We took a closer look at eight of them, and in particular, four particular interventions. And you know, these are so typical of other kinds of integration projects that have existed. So one of them had support workers for community matrons. So community matrons were already there, but these were workers who were able to sort of support that and work more closely with people in their homes. There was an intermediate care service, again, with extra workers. So these are professionals. These weren't volunteers. Another used integrated health and social care teams, more similar to Torbay, and others had got an out-of-hours and daytime response service. And then there were others which were more signposting services, so just giving people information, perhaps on discharge, about what might be available. We included those because we wanted to see whether there'd be any effect from that. And what we found with these was that, if anything, the emergency hospital admissions, which is on the left-hand side, seems to have been higher in the intervention group than in the control group, and this showed up on quite a lot of the projects, and none of them appeared to have had the effect on emergency admissions that it was hoped. And this has been a message when we've looked at this that comes out of a great deal of our work. So virtual wards is a very interesting innovation which was pioneered in London and is now being tried in different areas. These are multidisciplinary teams, usually involving or led by GPs, that deliver very sort of intensive, specific care to people, but in their homes for a time-limited period. These do not appear to have had any effect on emergency hospital use. Again, with the integrated care pilots, another big evaluation done by government, we couldn't see any reduction in hospital admissions. And again, just to reiterate with the partnerships for older people, it didn't seem to see anything. We've obviously spent some time trying to work out what we think was happening. The work that we've done that was more on the qualitative side, so our work in Trafford and North West London, I think really underlined some contextual factors that are critically important, which are not news to anyone, but the setting up and implementation of these projects takes a very, very long time. And typically, we're being asked to evaluate things in a really short period of time. So, you know, if it takes a year to get something off the ground and then 2 to 3 years really to show any effects, if you're evaluating our after, you know, a year or 18 months, you're not going to see anything. It's not possible. The problem is that the policy turnaround on all of this is so tight that we're being asked to sort of show effects over quite a short period of time. The other thing that came out of the more qualitative work is that there's often a lack of clarity about what the intervention might be doing, how it might be working. And so this is sort of critically important when we think about the social care interventions about, well, what is it that really makes a difference? Is it the fact that you're sending someone into a person's home? Is this about, you know, good nutrition, or is this about depression, or what is it? Can we isolate that? Because if we're not clear about that, you know, it could well be that there's poor quality primary care is the thing that's driving admissions. It's nothing to do with social care at all. And again, we found that, if you know, the qualitative work, that there can be a great deal of difference in practice about how an intervention is implemented. So it could be called something like a virtual ward, but actually each area is doing something slightly different about how it's finding cases. So sometimes it's just risk stratification models, and sometimes the GPs also add quite a lot of their own suggestions, or community matrons can. So again, you know, you're actually starting to see things which will potentially skew your results. And this, there's also quite a lot of, when you get asked people closely, you know, what is it that they really want, then the health and social care differences in outcomes, what's important, can start to become quite apparent when they weren't at a more sort of higher level. We've tried to pull together some thoughts that we try and talk to people when they come to who want stuff evaluated. So again, I won't go through all of these, but I think that the fact about the time period is important, and that we can't really, from the quantitative side, and you know, organisations like Marie Curie and others, and Age UK, we've done work with the British Red Cross. You know, they know that it's the quantitative results that are going to make a big difference to their ability to roll out their projects and get new funding. So this isn't just a government thing. They'll say, we can't go to the commissioners locally if we can't demonstrate that we can change this, you know, numerically. The fact that we've got users who are hugely relieved and happy to have had someone come into their home after they've been discharged from hospital doesn't cut it. It's not enough. So, but if you have an intervention group that's under 1,000 people, you know, it's very difficult for us to demonstrate any change, even if it worked. So, so the size is a problem. And, you know, we're thinking that we really do need to, as we move forward, work in many more mixed methods. But, of course, this then pushes the price of the whole evaluation up, and this is not always feasible. That we understand that, you know, the hospital, the emergency admissions is a sort of key and critical outcome, and it has traction. But it's not showing up so often now that, you know, we're thinking that reducing length of stay or bed days actually a more realistic outcome measure. You know, do we actually need to sort of reframe what's important here? But you know, policymakers are still determined and, well, I could say desperate to try and find interventions that will do this. And just to talk you through an example of a project that's now taking shape, the Cabinet Office, you probably can't see the font here, but the Cabinet Office have funded a social action project that's now underway in 7 different areas of the country, and these are projects that involve volunteers, typically bringing volunteers into people's homes on hospital discharge, but they're all being implemented in slightly different ways. So some people have got volunteers in the hospital in the A&E department, so they're picking people up before an admission and then going home with them. Other ones are in the inpatient ward talking to discharge nurses and bringing them back. And then, you know, from an evaluation point of view, you can start to see the complexity unfolding here. And some people will get a service where it's someone just to go home while you were right, phone them the next day. Other ones, the volunteer will do a lot more for them. So they will actually go and get food, make sure that the water's and electricity is still working, the heating is on, will keep coming back. So we have to find ways of capturing all of that in the evaluation. We've been commissioned to do the evaluation. And volunteers are being recruited, different kinds of volunteers with different levels of training. And so it's already starting to be quite complex. And this project is due to report in April 2015, so a month before the general election. It's clearly of great interest to the ministers to have something where they can show, yes, social action is demonstrably reduce pressures on hospitals. And I totally understand where they're coming from on this, and I think there is it's very, very important to keep going on, looking in the informal care and the volunteer space, because we simply can't, even if there was a revolution in attitudes to taxation in England, I don't think, that a more generous social care funding settlement is imminent. So it's important to find things that seem to work, and yet I've got a horrible feeling that we're going to be showing something that doesn't have any impact on emergency hospital admissions for this group, and it could even do the reverse. So it's not published yet, but we've done a bit of work for the British Red Cross, very similar projects in different parts of the countries, and we found that those who received the service were more likely to have emergency admissions afterwards. So this is potentially something here going on about the fact that the people receiving the service are potentially more isolated, or that we are drawing attention to unmet need, but this is not what people want to hear, and it's a real shame. So we're working quite hard to think about how we can design an evaluation. The good news from this is we've been brought in right at the beginning as these projects are taking shape, which is really important, because then we can have a dialogue with people rather than just landing on them when their project's done and saying, oh, it didn't work, sorry. So that process is there, but it's we have not necessarily figured out how we're going to do this fully yet. So that's a little flavour of the work that we're doing and the problems that we're grappling with. But if you have any specific questions, particularly on the methodological side, please contact me and I will direct you to those who have done the quantitative legwork. Happy to take any questions that you have.
Thank you, Ruth. It's, of course, discomforting to hear that the UK has taken the lead in the subject, that Europe has followed the UK in social innovation agenda. Now, we are now implementing the social innovation agenda, and you're showing that there are some things that we're not right at the beginning. So that's something we'll have to hear also from the story from Evelyn. But are there some questions? Please state your name. Any reactions, please? Yes?
I am Simon Botry from the charity Engage. I just wondered if you could say a bit more about what might possibly be better indicators of success rather than emergency admissions. I completely get what you mean.
And of course, to be fair to the sort of bigger evaluations, do have many other outcome measures. We've just focused on this one because it's the one that's eye-catching. I think reducing, having reasonable expectations about what level of reduction of emergency admissions you might have, because I think there's a tendency, particularly on the sort of policymaker side, maybe on the political side, to think that they're all somehow unnecessary. There are lots of emergency admissions that are entirely necessary and appropriate at that moment. So maybe it's more realistic to think in terms of how quickly you can get someone safely out of hospital. But there almost certainly are lots of emergency admissions that are due to some sort of social care failure, and it could be carer. I mean, you would know this, but I mean, carer burnout is one. Difficult to collect reliable information on that because people don't really want to admit to having brought someone to hospital because they're at the end of their tether, or others in which, better quality primary care in care homes may have a big effect and so forth. So I think it's worth keeping that one, but reducing length of stay. And also moving towards, getting the health side to accept that outcome measures that involve understanding that the people who've received services themselves feel safer and more independent and more able to do the things that they do are, you know, valuable and critical, you know, measures. But I don't think we can get out of the cost conundrum here. And I think those are the debates that are now starting to unfold about, you know, should we just be biting the bullet and saying we need to have more investment in the NHS and build more emergency departments or expand them? We've contracted them over time, not expanded them. We're contracting hospital beds, so should we be building more intermediate care services? You know, we have some, but the data's quite poor about just how many we've got. So, yeah, I don't think I've answered your question very well.